From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, depossession, neuroscience. It's going to be an amazing 3 hours. Here's what's happening. Well, a huge slap in the face to President Barack Obama. Looks like a Republican tide has ripped the Senate away from the Democrats, according to projections, giving the GOP full control of Congress and the power to pin down President Barack Obama during his last 2 years in office. In a moment, Howard Bloom will join us as we will talk about what this means to all of us. The state of Maine has reached an agreement with a nurse who was briefly quarantined after treating victims of Ebola in West Africa. Casey Hickok has tested negative for Ebola twice and has no symptoms, but Maine officials went to court to try to bar her from crowded public places. The deal complies with Friday's ruling by a judge that she should be free to travel but must monitor her health. A Connecticut man accused of snatching his DWI test results and attempting to eat them was charged with obstruction and criminal tampering. Just didn't want to get caught. Working antisocial hours, like we do, can prematurely age the brain and dull intellectual ability, according to scientists. Let's prove them wrong. Their study in the journal Occupational and Environmental Medicine suggests a decade of shifts aged the brain by more than 6 years. Now, there was some recovery after people stopped working these strange shifts, but it took 5 years to return to normal. Experts say the findings could be important in dementia, as many patients have disrupted sleep. The body's internal clock is designed for us to be active in the day and asleep at night. Let's check in with our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, about this. Well, Peter, we all work these weird hours. Does that mean we've got 6 years short of brain life or what?
Well, I don't think the one study would, confirm that. But there certainly is a problem with shift work, with working abnormal hours and not getting enough sleep. And this is not the only study to show there's a problem. Animal studies show that it's a bit like a head injury to repeatedly not get enough sleep. That's the main problem. It's the insomnia. And I think people need to avoid prolonged periods of time in which they're working shifts that disrupt their personal sense of a sleep cycle. Because some people can thrive on late hours. I'm fine at 1 a.m. in the morning.
How are you at 4 in the morning?
I'm pretty good at 4, but I'm not so good early in the morning, like 7, 8, or 9. So, we all have a different kinds of cycles. But absolutely, George, people need to be aware that if they're going to have a lot of insomnia from shift work or from any other cause, that it's going to affect their physical health. It'll make illnesses more frequent, accidents more frequent.
Sure does.
Perform as well. And there are a number of studies which show that it's not good for the brain. Most people aren't looking at the social problem which people have to face when they're working night shifts, though. And I think that's also a very big one. It deprives people of their normal social relationships, and that's not good for us either.
Well, it's tough. Peter, I have worked the night shift, for 20-some years, and it's very difficult. It's difficult in relationships. It's difficult in sleep patterns. The people are up cutting their grass early. You're getting phone calls. You either have to shut off your phones. So I have historically gone with about 6 hours of sleep a night. I've been able to function with that, God knows how. But for so many people who need their sleep, lastly, what do you recommend to people who have these strange antisocial shifts, as they call them? What do they do about it? They can't quit their jobs.
Well, I do think that often people can change their jobs. Not so many people have such a wonderful job as you do, or so much fun as I do at 1 a.m. in the morning with you, 1 a.m. Eastern time. I'm on the East Coast. But
yes,
I think people can work toward changing their jobs so that they're not doing something that really drastically interferes with their health or their happiness. It's still a big country with a lot of different ways to work. I think if you're younger, you can handle it better, as in most cases, than when you're older. And I also think if you're doing it very regularly like you are, that the body probably accommodates a great deal. But I don't know how much the social life accommodates, and we don't have any studies on it. You're the expert right now on that. Do you think you've lost much over the years from being awake when other people are asleep and vice versa?
Peter, don't hang up. I need to talk to you tonight.
Here's the answer.
Okay. It varies. Peter, thanks. Always a pleasure talking with Dr. Peter Breggin. Ford Motor Company. Calling back 202,000 vehicles and 5 North American recalls, covering several issues, including an incorrect repair in a previous recall. Geez, the number 2 U.S. automaker said it was aware of one accident so far in the case. Company recalling, this is what they are. You'll probably get notified. Ford Crown Victorias, Mercury Grand Marquis, Lincoln Town Car vehicles, models from 2005 through 2011. And in the autumn of 2013, Ford recalled 370,000 of the cars in the United States because of corrosion of the steering shaft that could result in loss of steering. A lot of recalls by these companies these days. Investigators probing the Virgin Spaceship II, the accident, they have established a human performance team now to help them understand the actions of the pilots. The new group will look at how the men interacted with the vehicle and the design and the layout of the systems that they used to control the craft. Spaceship II broke apart just seconds after igniting its rocket engine for its test outing above California on Friday. A pilot was killed, and a co-pilot was injured seriously in that, and he's still fighting for his life. What's up in the skies these days? Let's check in with Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. What's the latest for us, Steve, in astronomy these days?
George, there's so many exciting things. Let's start with the sun in our brief little discussion this morning. We found sunspot 2192 that was causing all that havoc on the disk of the sun. George, it's actually on the backside of the sun, may make another reappearance on the northeastern side, and maybe do it all again starting around November the 10th. But just as we would imagine, the sun's still with all its fury. How about this, George? Active region 2205, punching out M-class flares, now coming along the left edge of the sun. Now another thing to be concerned about, but none of those CMEs are headed our way. But, George, most people think, and this is not totally accurate, that solar flares are always caused primarily by large sunspot groups. We're finding out, and this has been known for a long time, another class of flares called hider flares are caused by these large filaments on the surface of the sun. When they slam into the sun, just the other day, we had another of these gigantic CMEs coming from not a sunspot group. Very interesting. And maybe a new class beyond X flare, a new class called Z, which is now way above into the X40 range, George. We've had a couple of those in the last 10 years. And very quickly, for November, folks, don't forget, and George, the Rosetta spacecraft will be deploying its small lander to the comet 67P on November 12th. This is exciting. The Leonid meteor shower storming, hopefully, for us here on November the 17th. And if you want to see the planet Mercury, look into the morning sky, George, just before sunrise. It's at its best for the year, and as always, always a privilege and honor to be here on Coast, and more at drsky.com and photorecon.net.
You got it. Thanks, Stephen. Appreciate it. Well, the Congress has made a very topsy-turvy turn, but what does that all mean for us? I can't think of a better person to talk with about this than Howard Bloom, and we'll be chatting with him, the author of The Genius of the Beast, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Howard Bloom with us, of course. Howard is the founding board member of the Epic of Evolution Society, the Darwin Project, noted author, including Global Brain, The Lucifer Principle, The Genius of the Beast. And we're going to talk with Howard for this hour about what has happened now around this country, this incredible shift of attitude. You know, we don't do a lot of politics on this program, but what we do is the human psyche. And let's bring Howard Bloom in. Howard, thanks for spending the night with us. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, George. It's a pleasure.
This is indeed an interesting scenario. And I want to go back just a little bit to the George Bush era, that when he was leaving, people couldn't wait to get rid of him. You know, it was the Republicans were no, let's, you know, bring in Barack Obama, let's bring in the Democrats. Now, here we are, 6 years later, They can't stand Barack Obama, and now they're making this change again. What is it, Howard, about the human mind that just makes them run back and forth the time?
You've got it, the human mind. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, and midterm elections of this kind have traditionally flushed out the party of the president in charge. We love you when you're our new president. We have our honeymoon period with you. And then, just as with a wife who turns into the old battle axe, we don't love you anymore. But there's a real heavy-duty perception problem here. First of all, America is a nation in need of a dream. We have a real problem of the human spirit here. And the dream is almost in our grasp with people like Elon Musk and Richard Branson taking us to the edge of space, even though we've had two major disasters this last week in that program. But we are being deceived in a bipartisan way by both the left and the right. On the left, we are being told that we are a cancer on planet Earth, that we have tapped out all the resources of our environment, that we are about to produce a cataclysmic global change, that, in fact, James Lovelock, an absolutely brilliant man who figured out for NASA how to determine whether a distant planet has life or not, and who came up with the Gaia Principle, there's a video making the rounds on YouTube in which he says this planet can only sustain 1 billion human beings. And he says this with a smile on his face. What does that mean for you and me? That means that 6 billion of us have to disappear. So that's the left wing's nightmare that they're foisting off on us. Then there's the right wing nightmare. Mitch McConnell told us from the very beginning of the Obama administration that Mitch and John Boehner would have a single-minded task to so sully Barack Obama that he would depart after 4 years. Well, they didn't succeed in that, but this task of making the only Republican goal in life to deep six Barack Obama, it has led to distortions as bad as the distortions from the right. So here's the reality. 2 months ago, September 5th, Forbes magazine, which calls itself the capitalist tool, Forbes magazine, which is owned by Steve Forbes, who has run for president on the Republican Party and loathes Barack Obama, put out a headline saying, Obama outperforms Reagan. Remember, Reagan is the god of the right.
He was the god of the right.
That's right, true. On jobs, growth, and investing. And it pointed out that 9 million jobs have been created under the Barack Obama administration so far. 10 million more people have health insurance. And here's the real deal. So the administration has been good for working class people. But the most astonishing thing, according to Forbes, is that the Obama administration has been good for fat cats. Corporate profits have almost tripled. They've gone up 143%. The stock market has doubled. Over the last week, it's been at its highest points in history. A dollar, if you'd invested a dollar at the beginning of the Reagan administration, by the time Reagan left 8 years later, your dollar would have returned yielded an 190% return. That's pretty staggering. But then Forbes says, if you'd invested a dollar at the beginning of the Obama administration, in only 5.5 years, less time than for Reagan, that dollar would have yielded 220%, far more than under Ronald Reagan. And Forbes says this level of investor growth is unprecedented by any administration in the history of the nation. Now, you and I would never believe that, because every time we turn on our television and we see a politician, a Republican politician, the Republican politician is repeating like a parrot the words, failed Obama policy and failed Obama economy. And apparently, judging from what Forbes says, and I've double-checked, it's true. Forbes goes on to say that under Bush, we were hemorrhaging jobs. We were offshoring. Remember that?
That's
both
right.
Jobs and factories were just flooding out of this country. The direct quote from Forbes is manufacturing was declining in America and plants were closing across the nation. Now, with 63 straight months of economic expansion and 25 consecutive months, that's over 2 years, of manufacturing expansion, none of us know this, but manufacturing and production in October went to its highest level since May of 2004, its highest level in 10 years, and you and I never heard about it. It wasn't
so why?
On television.
So why today, though, Howard? Why today this major shift, this message to the president?
You put your finger on part of it, and that is once we've settled on something, we're not satisfied, and we want to move on to something else. This kind of change in the middle of an administration has been happening since the 1900s. It just goes on over and over again. Yes, we are fickle. But the most astonishing thing is, you know, the first two laws of science. Rule number one is the truth at any price, including the price of your life, the law of courage. Law number two is look at things right under your nose as if you've never seen them before. See the things right under your nose. Well, the economy is getting better, and we don't know it. We have been deceived by a very clever strategy of, you could call it deception, you could call it propaganda. There's a statement. When Richard Nixon was first campaigning for president, one of his advisors wrote the following: reason requires a high degree of discipline, of concentration. Impression is easier. The emotions are more easily roused, closer to the surface, more malleable. In other words, don't appeal to people's reason in a political campaign. Don't give them facts. They're not going to know whether they're facts or not. People are gullible, in essence, is what this says. Appeal to their emotions. So a strange thing, a very strange thing happened today. Despite all that we heard about the Republicans leading in the polls, which turned out to be true, the fact is that 35% of the electorate was voting against Barack Obama. But 65% of the electorate, twice as many people, were dissatisfied with Republican leadership in Congress. So now we're going to get more of the same. But our job is to open our eyes. And our job is to open our eyes to something else. It's something that we talked about just about 10 days ago. And that is, we live in the most astonishing system in the history of the world, the Western system. And it's our job to recognize its glories, to recognize its positive achievements, to figure out how we've done them, and then to outdo them astonishingly. And by those achievements, I mean, in 150 years, we've doubled the human lifespan. The human lifespan has gone up from 38.5 years to almost 80 years. That's an increase of over 40 years in 150 years. It's astonishing. The average, the poorest paid worker in the Western world today earns what an entire tenement full of workers, the poorest paid workers, earned in 1850. The average person today is 4 inches taller than 100 years ago. The average person today has an IQ 35 points higher than the average person in 1900, 114 years ago. That puts the average person today, you know, we're always told about how dumbed down we are, Twitter and Facebook. It means the average kid in junior high school today measures marginal genius on a Stanford-Binet IQ test from the year 1900. And most important of all, peace has gone up by a factor of 10. Your odds and mine of dying a violent death at the hands of another human being in a war or any other circumstance is one-tenth of it would have been what it was in one of those wonderful indigenous societies we hear about that live at peace with nature and harmony, or harmony with nature and peace with the world. No, I'm sorry, they didn't live in peace. It's 10 times as great as it was 350 years ago.
Unless you walk through a crime-ridden city, Howard.
Well, I do. I have very deliberately, one day, it was 1991, and there were riots in L.A. That's when the Rodney King riots were happening.
I remember it.
And I took the subway up to Harlem, and I walked from 157th Street down to 110th Street. Nothing was happening. I've walked through riots and come out perfectly safe.
You're lucky.
I'm lucky. You never know.
So I think there's going to be a lot of executive orders over the next 2 years in an effort to circumvent Congress. What do you think?
That could very easily be the thing that scares me the most. I'm not in complete agreement with the Obama administration by any stretch of the imagination. The things that scare me are the NSA, the spying programs that spy on you and me, and the environmental policy, because I do not believe that we are correct. I mean, yes, global warming may well be happening, but this is a planet of extraordinary climate change.
Yeah, absolutely.
For 4.5 billion years now. And there's no way in hell we humans are going to stop climate change simply by taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. If we seriously want to affect climate change, and that's a noble goal, then we have to get very serious about developing climate stabilization technologies. But simply imagining that if we just remove our influence from the atmosphere, everything will be fine. There have been 142 mass extinctions on this planet, and there were no tailpipes. There were no smokestacks.
You got it, Howard. I've been saying that for years. We're going to come back with you. We're going to continue chatting, and we'll take some phone calls. We're with Howard Bloom. I wanted him on today not to talk about the political election and what happened, but to talk about what happened in the minds of the people who made the change. We'll be back. Welcome back. Howard Bloom with us this hour. We'll get your calls, too. Howard, why are we so easily tricked or fooled?
Well, unfortunately, Goebbels had it absolutely right. You know, the minister of propaganda for Adolf Hitler, and the two of them, Hitler and Goebbels, said concoct a lie so big, so outrageous, that if you repeat it over and over again, people will take it for granted. Well, why would you take for granted a lie that's big and outrageous? Simply because it's been repeated over and over again. Once you've repeated it, I knew this, you know, I ran the biggest PR firm in the music industry. It was one of my ways of getting field work in my field, which is mass human behavior and the forces of history.
Right.
And I knew that I had this unknown from 19-year-old, unknown 19-year-old from Minneapolis named Prince. No one had heard of him. But I knew that if I could get him mentioned 150 to 300 times, his name would stick. And in fact, it did. So if you train your entire cadre of politicians, as the Republicans have done extremely successfully over the last 16 years or so, if you train them all to repeat the mantra of the day, the phrase of the day, so that no matter where you and I turn as viewers, we hear that phrase, failed Obama policies, failed Obama economy, we come to believe it. And then there are other elements that contribute to this. You know, one of a nation's greatest assets is its infrastructure of fantasy. Its infrastructure of fantasy is that sort of unknown dream, or that dream we don't talk about, that motivates us day after day after day and gives us a sense that our society is carrying humans toward a future that will liberate them, that will take them to some kind of paradise on Earth. And our infrastructure of fantasy has been poisoned by the kind of left-wing eco-nihilism that I've talked about. And you can see the evidence of that in the new movie in Interstellar. Here's one of the most astonishing movies made in our lifetime. The teamwork that went into this film is beyond belief. It started with Steven Spielberg. It moved on to Christopher Nolan. His brother John Nolan was involved. Linda Obst, who's a major figure in Hollywood. All kinds of people have been involved in this film. And what does it tell us? Humans are a cancer on the planet, and humans are eating up all of the resources of this planet. And the simple fact of the matter is that for every ounce of biomatter, of living stuff on this planet, there are 120 million ounces of dead stuff. That's 120 million ounces of dead atoms and molecules waiting to be recruited, kidnapped, and seduced into this grand project you and I are a part of, the Project of Life. The greening of this planet has barely begun, and humans have contributed enormously to the greening of the planet. We've reached out into all kinds of deserts and scrublands and irrigated them and increased the number of plants by 100-fold or more. We've done this over and over again. We've done it all over the planet. So we are increasing nature. We are not decreasing nature. But Interstellar takes the position that, oh, all the resources are gone. All the resources are gone. Give me a break when there are 120 million ounces of resources waiting there for every ounce of life today. So you and I have to be careful to watch out for repetition, because repetition sneaks in by a force that's called cueing. Cueing is stuff we're not aware of seeing. We're not aware of hearing. In the classic experiments on cueing, you're an experimenter, and you've hired a composer to compose a bunch of music that is totally original. Nobody will ever hear out of the context of your lab. And you've told people that they're coming in to do a paper and pencil test. They think that's what the psychological experiment is about. So right. For 45 minutes, they fill out the paper. They check off boxes and stuff like that. They fill in their name. And what they don't realize is that this is really a test about the music in the background. And you're playing a bunch of music they have never heard in their lives before, because it was composed especially for you. Now, bring them in 6 weeks later and play them 5 different musical selections. And among those musical selections, plant the musical selection that you played to them when they were filling out this paper and pencil test.
Yep.
Guess which they will pick.
That's
as their
the one.
Favorite. And they will not remember that they've ever heard it before in their lives. Back in the 1970s and 1980s, this was called subliminal suggestion and subliminal advertising. It worked through the force that we now call cueing in psychology. And the Republican Party is very good at this, but Democrats have a difficulty disciplining themselves. Democrats don't like to be parrots. At least they don't like to consciously be parrots. So it's what you hear over and over and over again that you believe, and it's time for culture leaders, people like you and me, who are here to try to reframe perceptions, to try to get a set of different perceptions repeated over and over again, so they take over the public mind, and hopefully perceptions that are more accurate and that are going to do people more good. For example, right now we have to tell all the Republicans who are about to flood into Congress and the Senate, if it's not broken, don't fix it. The economy is doing far more robustly than any other previous administration, if Forbes magazine is correct. Don't mess with it.
See, we're going to take calls here with you now, Howard, but they've got 2 years
right.
to not rock the boat, because they got a presidential election coming up, and if the Republican Congress screws up, you're going to end up with another Democratic president.
Well, it's going to be very hard for them to avoid screwing up, because there's a book by Heather Cox Richardson, a pretty amazing historian, called To Make Men Free, and it's a history of the Republican Party. And she demonstrates that who was in power just before the biggest stock market crash and the biggest depression of the late 19th century, the depression of 1873 to 1879, called the Long Depression. Republicans using Republican policies of let's give more money to the rich. The same thing happened in 1929, two Republican administrations. Calvin Coolidge to Herbert Hoover, crash, one of the biggest crashes in American history. And George Bush, the Great Recession of 2008. And her point, and she may be right or she may be wrong, but she believes that when you get too much disparity, when too much of the money goes to the top and there's too little money on the bottom, there's nobody to buy the goods of the factories that the people on top own. And as a consequence, the economy crashes. So the Republicans are going to have to avoid their ideological temptation to impoverish the people on the bottom in order to enrich the people on the top, or the people on the top won't have customers and we'll have another crash.
Here we go. Dave in Spokane, Washington now, west of the Rockies. David, you're on with Howard Bloom.
Hey, good evening, guys. I just wanted to say that with regard to what Howard was talking about and psychological thoughts of people, the only thing I would agree that basically people are by and large procrastinators. They don't like change, and they won't address a problem until it's kind of right in their face. And the don't like change thing, I think that's a big reason that so many people didn't like Obamacare from the beginning. It was so huge of a document that, you couldn't read through it for most people quick enough, but they didn't like it just because they knew it was something different. People don't like change in general. I had to kind of contradict some of the things you were saying. I guess it's from Forbes, though. Just because it's written doesn't mean it's true. And for them to be talking about the most robust economy rebound, I think the flaw of that is doesn't make an apples-to-apples comparison. In the same way that quarterbacks are given too much credit and too much blame for wins and losses, I think administrations are given far too much credit and blame for the economy. I mean, the reasons that you've got the economy booming right now, and if you look at a comparison from when Obama, for example, was elected to now, is because the stock market had pummeled down over 40%, closing in on 50 when he took office. So obviously there was a big rebound potential there. And if you look at a big portion of that, is interest rates have been incredibly low, historically low, which is obviously a big stimulator for the economy. And that's been held by our Fed. Plus, the international turmoil has caused a lot of people to seek safety by buying U.S. bonds, which puts further pressure on interest rates to keep them low. I mean, there's so many other things that crop into this that are not apples to apples. You can't just make a presidential-to-presidential comparison without taking all these things into account.
Well, I agree with you, especially on the point that you can't necessarily blame the administration or even the Congress and the Senate for major economic crashes. My book, The Genius of the Beast, A Radical Revision of Capitalism, makes the point that cycles of boom and bust are common to all living forms on planet Earth. They happen to bacterial colonies. They happen to lynx. They happen to snowshoe rabbits. They happen to lizards. So you can't necessarily, I mean, and they don't have presidents. And that lynx and snowshoe rabbits do, and lizards do not have Republican and Democratic parties, and yet they crash and boom nonetheless. So you're quite right. Heather Cox Richardson's point, that she makes a very strong point that Republican administrations have traditionally brought the greatest of our depressions for the last 140 years. Maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's when we are beginning to show the early signs of the circumstances that will lead to the next great bust. Maybe some, for some reason, we are impelled to elect Republicans at that time. Causation or correlation is not causation. So your points are well taken.
Next up, we go to Arnold in Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Arnold. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
Howard, I want to thank you for being on tonight. You are such a good, great voice of hope. I know there are a lot of guests who are kind of prophets of doom, but you're always optimistic. You're giving us a brighter future. But the question I'm wanting to ask is, it seems that the middle class is not getting that benefiting from this economy. And I'm wondering how much this has to do with the being a culture of selfishness in the wealthier wealth and political sections. There seem to be more accepting of the philosophies of Ayn Rand than traditional American conservative values.
Well, I think the Ayn Randian philosophy, the idea that greed is good, that selfishness is terrific, I find that rather appalling myself. But the fact is that the American economy, the middle class in the American economy suffered because of that outsourcing of jobs and outsourcing of factories that we were talking about. We were up against a competition. Our labor was up against competition from the labor of China in particular. China sucked the wind out of the sails of every nation around it, including Japan, which has been in a state of economic stagnation for 20 years because it can't compete with the Chinese. But because we've nearly doubled the amount, we've increased the amount of oil that we're drilling here in the United States by 70%. This is under Obama, of all the ironic things. And we've had this enormous boom in domestically drilled natural gas. Factories have been moving back here. And the more factories move back here, the more you're going to discover that there are middle-class jobs again, that you can pay people a decent wage. And there's another wind of hope. There are two other winds of hope. The space program, eventually the stuff that people like Elon Musk are doing, Elon's going to get us. If Congress and the Senate doesn't stop him, and they will try, they have tried in the past, recently, If they don't stop him, he will have Americans in space on American vessels, American transport vehicles, for the first time since 2011. And once we begin to tap the resources of space, the resources of one asteroid can be worth as much as the total gross domestic product of the United States. Pull in three asteroids, and it's worth the total gross domestic product of the entire world, of all of humanity. That's going to open a vast new frontier in the same way that in 1848, this seemingly good-for-nothing, empty space that all the experts said was poisonous and good only for rattlesnakes and scorpions. California, in 1948, when we started putting people there, as difficult as it was to put people there, all of a sudden you had a boom that changed the very nature of the American economy. And the same will happen with space.
Next up, Sharon is in Crane, Missouri. Sharon, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Mr. Bloom, I really admire your work, and I admire your words. I really believe that the American people have lost faith in themselves and their ability to do and to lead and to have dreams that are bigger than themselves, bigger than this country. And I believe that they have lost. You can't just say that it's concrete things. There is emotion to a country's belief in itself. If you don't have the capability or the desire to reach out and go for exploration, go for new things, or believe that you can do anything if you just set your mind to it, then you've got a kind of sickness in your country's soul. And until the country can get past that, we're going to have a problem here. That's one of the reasons why they don't believe that things are getting better.
I agree with you totally, absolutely totally. We have a vision deficit. We have a confidence deficit. And the best thing that we can do is, George is a major thought leader. He probably has 10 million listeners or more a night. I'm a minor thought leader compared to George, but our entire job, what we dedicate our lives to, is communication. And those of us who are in the communication business have to evangelize. And I say that despite being an atheist and, you know, a rather materialist person. But without spirit, we are nothing. And we, those of us who are capable of showing a positive path, have to preach that path with all our heart and souls, even if it's, in my case, a path totally based on science, not based on any kind of mysticism.
Good point. First-time caller now, we have Joel in Frederick, Maryland. Good to have you with us, Joel. You're on with Howard Bloom.
Thanks so much. I appreciate, George, the opportunity that you've given all of us in your medium there. And, Mr. Bloom, I appreciate your comments as well. And the reason I called tonight, by the way, I've been listening for years on and off, and it's just a fantastic program.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So the reason I'm calling is in response to Mr. Bloom's response to your question regarding what is the psychology behind the massive change that occurred tonight and the change of power in Washington. And I know Mr. Bloom listed many financial things regarding the improvement of the economy. For me, the reasons have little to do with the economy and much to do with character. Initially, President Obama promised transparency, and that related to the Health Care Act that he was going to be planning, and it would be shown on C-SPAN. Well, of course, not only did that not happen, but there wasn't, to my knowledge, in the final planning stages of the Health Care Act, even one Republican that was involved in consulting the planning of that. And then it was pushed through using some very shady tactics in the Senate. And people, there was no transparency there. There was serious scandals such as Benghazi, IRS, so on and so forth. Mr. Obama initially said that these would not be tolerated. He wouldn't sleep. They wouldn't rest until they found out what the cause of these issues was. These were never done. He suspended an alarming amount of rate. He has spent an alarming amount of money to the point where we're really on a precipice. Our debt is so tremendous.
Let me just stop you on the debt because the debt has come down.
And we got 30 seconds, Howard.
Right. The debt has come down, and the transparency problem is huge because I voted for Barack Obama twice because he promised me transparency and honesty. And this has not been an honest administration. The whole NSA scandal with Edward Snowden demonstrated the extent to which there are vast amounts of knowledge that George, you, and I should have in order to think through being concerned citizens, in order to vote. And it's been labeled top secret, and there's been a certain contempt, as in the Benghazi case, for your brain and mine.
Sure. Howard, thanks again. I love your perspective. So important to have you on tonight in a non-political role. Howard Bloom up next. Depossession, neuroscience. That's next.